Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Best Ever You Show with your host, Elizabeth Hamilton Garino, CEO and founder of the Best Ever You Network. The Best Ever You Show is here to help you live your life to the fullest. How? Real people, including celebrities, real advice, real places, products and businesses, real life stories. With this radio show, printed magazine, websites, community, and more. And now, here is your host, Elizabeth.
Hey, everybody. Happy July 16th. It's Tuesday, July 16th, and we're so happy that you're listening to our show today. And thank you to everyone at Blog Talk Radio for sharing and featuring our show with their support and all of your support with all the listens and shares and social media going on. We are at just about 1.4 million downloads and listens. So I just so appreciate your following and doing everything that you're doing to make the show just a huge success. And I love it when I bump into people in social media. I have no clue who they are, and it turns into them being guests on the show. And we have one of those cases today with Harrison Monarth with us. I can't even remember. Did we meet on Twitter, Harrison, or was it LinkedIn? I can't remember.
I think LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, yeah, I think it was, and then I followed you everywhere and begged you to come on the show. But let me just tell you for just a brief moment here who Harrison is. And if you don't know him already, I'm sure most of you do, because he's a New York Times bestselling author. His book, The Confident Speaker, is based on years of research and practice in the field of persuasive communication and high-impact speaking. And he is one of the most sought-after speech coaches in the United States. He regularly prepares CEOs, senior executives, political candidates, and other leading professionals for high-stakes presentations and speaking opportunities. So there's my and there's my and. And Harrison, do you get ums and ands out of people a little more?
Yes, we do. We do. It's not our main focus, but I'll tell you what, it's one of those things that is relatively easy to get rid of. And it's not always bad. We do that sometimes to fill a moment of silence or to catch our sort of train of thought if it derails. But it's not a terrible thing unless it just punctuates and peppers your entire speech or your talk can happen in conversations. But it's relatively easy to get rid of, actually. Once people focus on the idea or on the fact that they're doing it, it's fairly easy to stop doing it, because all of a sudden you'll be focused on it, you'll hear it, you'll notice it yourself, and then you have the opportunity to stop doing it by getting the impulse first before you say and then you avoid it, and you actually just, you're comfortable with that moment of silence before you continue speaking. So it's not terribly difficult to get rid of.
Do you think what are some of the biggest problems people have with speaking, other than maybe just the fear of speaking, I'm guessing? Do you ever have anybody that you work with who's just like, there's no way I'm getting up in front of that crowd, not a chance?
You know, I haven't really, so people that come to us aren't necessarily the ones that say, I will never get up in front of a crowd. In fact, it's typically the other way around. It's people that have to address people, that have to give talks, that are leaders in companies, and that have to do town hall meetings and hold conferences and so on. And, it's not the most comfortable thing in the world. Unless you're super passionate about something and you really are dying to share a message, it's just not something that people are generally comfortable with. But I'll say unfortunately for some people, but it is just one of those things we have to do as part of our jobs, part of our living. We have to advance our ideas and get our messages across and talk to people to share information or to share who we are as a leader. And so it's not something that many of us in leadership positions can actually escape. And so a lot of people just kind of slug through it and hope for the best. But the successful ones are the ones that actually spent some thought and spent some time learning how to do it well. And so that's why we're here.
And the website that goes with what you're talking about is called the Guru Maker. So you go to gurumaker.com. It's the School of Professional Speaking. And we'll talk about your books as well. But you actually have a School of Professional Speaking. is this something, you know, I'm trying to picture Harrison in, like, kindergarten. Were you the guy giving all the little running for student senate and student council and speaking in front of all the classmates, or is this something that you got your arms around and became comfortable with later on?
Yes, it's actually it's funny that you mentioned that. I was quite the opposite of that person you just described. I was never comfortable speaking in front of people. In fact, as a child, I was painfully shy, and my mom would always, if the attention was focused on me and people would ask me a question in public, my head would turn so red, it always looked like it was about to explode, and my mom would say, oh, there it is, the tomato advertisement. And I never felt comfortable. And sitting in conferences or sitting at a meeting and the discussion would come to me. And again, this was, whether it's in high school and in college or as a very young adult, it was something that I was never comfortable with. But I realized that if I want to get anywhere in life, I really have to learn to manage this and master it and learn how to not just become comfortable speaking in front of people, but also how to really be focused and make a point and get the message across and get people to listen to me and fight for their attention. So it really was something that I myself knew I had to do. And then slowly but surely, as I used it in my work as a consultant, I realized this is something I'm actually helping people. I can help people do this. And so in my 20s already, I started coaching people, not officially, but unofficially, and then eventually became a profession for me. And since then, I've worked with some of the top CEOs in the United States, with leaders from different from companies all over the world, and travel all over the world to coach effective messaging, message development, message delivery, and message strategy, and of course speaking itself. And it's been a great ride, and it's a living that I'm very happy about, because I help make a difference in other people's lives.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you like writing or speaking better, or both?
You know, it's both such, they're both very, I don't think you can be an excellent speaker if you're not also a good writer. I think you have to be able to, and that's, you know, one of the things that people miss very often in when they do give presentations or do give talks, is they have to prepare and they have to develop a message sort of from ground up and from scratch. And so you have to have some idea on how to write effectively, how to edit yourself effectively, unless you have people that do it for you. You know, I'm the president of the United States doesn't necessarily write his own speeches, although he does do a lot of editing himself. So, you know, inserts his own flavor, so to speak, and his own style. But, you know, most of us have to do our own writing and crafting of messages. And so the two really go hand in hand, because writing is thinking and speaking is thinking. And so in order to get the message across concisely, succinctly, and so that people want to hear it and follow it, you have to do both well.
Tell us about your book, because there's a few of them.
Yeah, absolutely. The book you mentioned a few minutes ago, that's The Confident Speaker. So that was my first book, and I wrote that with my co-author, Lorena Case. She is it's Dr. Lorena Case. She's also on our team, on our Guru Maker team. Lorena is a specialist in the treatment and study of anxiety, and so she was at Temple University, actually. And she contributed a lot of great information and advice on how to deal with fear, manage one's fear, manage one's anxiety when we have to get up and speak. And so that book came out in 2007, publishers in McGraw-Hill. The next book was Executive Presence, The Art of Commanding Respect Like a CEO. And so that came out in 2009. And that book has hit a nerve with a lot of companies and people all over the world. So, in fact, last year I was in Singapore twice. I'm going to Singapore and Australia next month for Hewlett-Packard to help executives and managers and directors project project proper leadership behavior and effective leadership and communication with their leaders so that they can meet their organizational objectives. And so executive presence is something that has definitely become a goal for a lot of, a learning goal, basically a development goal for a lot of companies and executives. So we're doing a lot of work around that. And then the 360 degrees of influence, I saw you had that an image of that book on the homepage here on your site. And mm-hmm. that was my most recent book, and that came out in December of 2011. So that's 360 degrees of influence, primarily focuses on how we all can have influence. You don't have to be in a leadership position, but we can all, once we understand how people react, how people make decisions, we can all have influence and basically work together with others to achieve our goals. And then I have a new book coming out. I don't know if I mentioned that to you. It's called Breakthrough Communication, and that is coming out this December, so in about 6 months, 5 months.
Busy, busy, busy writing. That's
busy,
awesome.
Yes.
Yeah, absolutely. Did you, when you first started doing all this, you mentioned you were maybe in your 20s getting started. Did you have a mentor or anything, or anybody that you worked with, or was there someone who inspired you to go down this path?
Yeah, you know, I didn't really have one specific mentor and not someone that was in my immediate environment, but my mentors were really the people that I looked up to or the people that I watched that I thought are doing very well and getting their message across, and people would follow their suggestions and their ideas and follow their advice, and basically, you know, they were captivated. And that, I remember that I had a boss at one of the companies I worked for early on. He was Austrian and just a very charismatic individual, knew his subject matter and his business incredibly well, was very passionate about it and could speak about it in ways that it really would get under your skin. It would really, you know, whether you were interested in the topic or not, but he was so passionate and so intriguing in the way in his delivery and his sharing of his messages that you just couldn't help but listen, and you were captivated by that. And so, you know, there are lots of people in our environment or in our sort of, whether you watch them on TV or you're able to observe them live, there are people around us that inspire us. And so I've always been intrigued by compelling speakers and people that are able to command the room and command a crowd.
Yeah, that's hard to do, to be in a room of people and have all eyes on you and pull it off. Do you have any tips for people? I'm sure there are people in my crowd who listening right now who are moving to that level of they've written a book and they're going to be speaking about it for the next year. Sounds vaguely familiar to me. But, you know, the group of a lot of the people who follow Best Ever You are right at that place where we're writing books, we're educated, we've maybe had our children, you know, those types of things, and we're moving into that phase of public speaking or going into businesses and speaking and those types of things, or we're being interviewed on air or we're on TV. Is there one, two, three, four, five things maybe that you could give us to help us succeed?
Sure. There are a couple of things that I would say right off the bat is the myth that you could be completely comfortable and relaxed when you are in such a situation. So first of all, that doesn't happen just because, you know, we have some very, I think, ancient things working on us, you know, our hormones and our emotions, the fight or flight syndrome, and when we perceive fear. Now, in a lot of these cases, obviously, we're talking about a psychological fear. We're not talking a real fear, like, you know, we could just be eaten by a bear. But it's the fear of being judged or the fear of being found inadequate. And, you know, so those are psychological fears that absolutely are there ways to manage those and deal with those. You know, and I would say anyone that is not used to that kind of environment or is starting to speak or starting to, you know, promote a message is stop focusing on yourself and start focusing on the audience and on the message. Now, you might think that, well, if I focus on the audience, that's exactly what gets me scared, because I see these audience members and, you know, maybe they have a frown on their face, or maybe they look like they're bored. And, you know, this is where I tell our clients, is if you focus on your message and you of course, you have to know your subject matter very well, and you have to know what you're talking about, and you have to, you know, be able to connect the dots for the audience. But if you really focus on that message you're trying to get across, and the evidence and the research you have behind it, and everything you've been working on probably for a while, if you focus on that, then you really don't have a lot of bandwidth, as they say. You don't have a lot of room left to focus on yourself and how inadequate you might feel in the moment, you know. And so that kind of focus requires a lot of discipline, and it just requires work. People that know how to meditate, for instance, may have an easier time with this, you know, because they're able to quiet their mind, they're able to focus on something, and just kind of be in the moment. But if you feel like your mind is all over the place, and you're you know, scattered, and you are thinking about a million different things, and you can't seem to clear your mind, you just have to practice that. But it's an important skill. So being able to stay in the moment, focusing on your message and how that message can help the audience. I always say, if you can provide a good value to your audience, or even if it's a conversation partner, you're somebody who's sitting, sitting across from you, by providing a value to that person, you're going to be much more disciplined in what you're presenting, and you're going to be more concise, you're going to be more relevant, you're going to resonate more with that person. Now, and contrast that with the conversation partner who likes to talk about himself and goes from one detail into another and really just goes off on long tangents and it's those people who really, they're into themselves, and they're really not even thinking about the audience. They're thinking about what they have to say and all these things they want to share and have to share, but really not really thinking about, how does this apply to my audience right now? What can they do with this in their lives? How will this shape their lives and impact their lives? And I think by doing that, that's the best tip I can possibly give anyone, is to be able to focus on how can you help your audience? What can, even if it's entertainment value, you know, if I'm just going to entertain the audience, you know, what would make them laugh? What would make them think? What would make them excited? And what would make their lives better? If you focus on that, I guarantee that your anxiety will diminish, that your fear will virtually disappear. Sure, we'll always be a little bit uncomfortable being sort of separated, you know, from the pack and having everybody look at us. But again, we don't focus on that. We focus on the value we provide. So that's one. I'll give you one or two more. Another one is that I just touched on that, and that is preparation. And I work with a lot of executives that are brilliant in their field, and they're very accomplished. But the ability to prepare, not sitting down in front of a PowerPoint presentation and throwing up a few slides and then basically putting the entire presentation onto those slides so that all they have to do is read from those slides and really pay much more attention to the PowerPoint and to the slides than they are to the audience. You know, for that, you have to prepare. You really have to think about, what does all this mean? What is this subject matter I'm talking about? How does this affect their lives? And how can I present it in the most engaging and lively manner possible, which means maybe using more images, a lot less text, a lot less, you know, wording on the screen, and just really being focused on the. I always say simple communication is best, and I use the sentence or sentences like it sometimes. I tell people, you know, many of us in business, they communicate like this. I'll give you a sample sentence. It is not efficacious to indoctrinate a superannuated canine with innovative maneuvers. Right? So a lot of smart people might look at that and go, yeah, I guess I kind of know what that means. And then, but they have to work at it, right? They have to really think about it. What it means is, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, right? So I said it in words that, lots of professionals, they speak that way. You know, they, when they give reports, they give corporate updates, and it's just, that kind of language doesn't inspire anyone. It doesn't really get into your, you know, into your awareness immediately. You have to think about it. And the more you have to think about these things, you know, now add that up. Imagine an entire presentation like that at that level. And your brain would literally fry within a few minutes and people tune out. And that's why so many presentations just aren't very good, is because, you know, the speaker is missing the point, or is just not concise enough, or is not specific enough, not simple enough in the language they choose. And so a lot of people miss what's being said.
Do you know that since we've been speaking, that sentence that you said was the only thing I've forgotten?
There you go.
Seriously?
There you go.
I can't even remember what you said.
Yeah. And we just have to focus a lot more on the audience as well. You know, and who is my audience? What is my goal with the audience? That's that too. You know, when we talk about public speaking or giving presentations, giving talks, a lot of times we speak in very sort of general terms. It's like, you know, what's a great way to be successful in giving presentations or public speaking? And you know, my answer very often is, it depends. What are you trying to accomplish? You know, are you trying to let the audience know who you are? Is that your main purpose? Is it to educate the audience, to inspire them, to advance a policy? Is it to raise money for a charity? You know, what is it? What's the purpose? And then we tailor everything to that particular purpose, keeping the audience's specifics in mind, and that, you know, the demographics, their level of understanding, their experience, their background, you know, their beliefs, their values, what do they hold dear? Well, what are they working with every day? You know, what are they against? So, you know, in order to be able to counter any kind of resistance, or to alleviate resistance, you know, to help people see the light, so to speak, you know, because if you have a great idea and something that's innovative, then, well, you may have to fight for it. You know, you have to make a good argument, a good case, which means you have to present evidence. You have to understand the audience's reasoning. And so, you know, argue at that level. So that's not easy. And that's, so that requires preparation and homework and prior research. And I think that's a step that a lot of people don't make, and so that's one of the things that we help them develop those skills and understand, and so they can get their point across when it's necessary.
You, I'm just curious. You have that radio voice, kind of like an almost TV anchor or radio. Did you ever consider being have you ever been a TV anchor or a radio personality? Did you ever consider it? I'm just curious there, because you seem like you have that voice.
I have been told that before. I've not really considered it. You know, I wanted to go into acting again when I was younger, and I found that I wasn't very good at it. I found that it takes a lot of it's one of those crafts that I have tremendous respect for, you know, because when you think about it, and it's actually an interesting topic, is when you think about it, actors are just some of the most, and I'm talking about good actors, right? Because there are a lot of people that aren't that good at it, and we see them on TV, but good actors are just tremendously gifted communicators and persuaders. And when you think about someone that is taking a script, you know, just words on a page, and they turn that into a thing that you and I believe when we're sitting in the movie theater in front of the TV, and we cry or we laugh or we, you know, we feel certain emotions. Maybe we're angry and frustrated with the character. And that's just the person actually presenting emotions that sort of inspire our emotions and that make us feel like it's just real. Even though we know it's not real, but we're able to suspend our disbelief there for a certain amount of time. And so, you know, acting is... And so it's difficult. That is actually a very difficult craft. Now, we use actors. We have several actors on our team, on our staff, that help executives actually get out of their own way and portray the emotions they want to portray. So it's all about, you know, if you're in a company, or if you are in any kind of situation where you need to convey a certain emotion. Let's say you're a manager that has to break the bad news that a division is being laid off, or you know, certain people are going to lose their job. Imagine just going in there and blandly sharing that information. You know, people will immediately, first of all, they'll resent you for the information, but they'll resent you even more for sort of a lack of empathy, a perceived lack of empathy, and a detachment or a cold personality. Well, mm-hmm. by being able to not fake the emotion, but being able to really feel that and empathize with people, and showing that emotion, that makes communicators more effective, and that makes people feel more connected. That makes people feel that you're authentic when you can do that. And so we use, our actors are teaching our executives and our clients how to do that and how to get out of their own way, and then, you know, to kind of break through that professional shell and become a human being. So, yeah. Anyway, sorry, that was a long answer to a simple question.
I think it's actually really pertinent to the conversation, because, so you know, a lot of executives are, I think sometimes people get really lost, especially in all the hours they're working, or they might change and be very ego and lose heart and lose focus and lose what's important and things like that. And I'm kind of curious also if you ever have to do, if it's not just speaking, but more life coaching.
Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I have, can't tell you the name, but I have one very senior executive of a Fortune 10 company that is in line to be the next CEO for the firm, and who has the mandate to me was help this person with executive presence, and in a way that the person's demeanor comes across as gruff and as dismissive and as, you know, always dour and just not very friendly and nice, and therefore people are afraid of that person and won't share bad information, don't necessarily speak up when they should speak up, when they feel like they have an idea to contribute, or when they aren't okay with something, when they feel like, you know, there's a better way to do something. So, and that can really cause problems, and it can cause problems in organizations, in nonprofits, whether it's, you know, a nonprofit or a corporation, or the political environment as well. And so we had to work together on, you know, what's causing this. Are you aware of it? You know, and so we did a survey in the company, a 360. It's called a 360. You know, 360. A degree multi-rater feedback survey where people were basically giving their honest feelings, attitudes, and about that person, and shared freely what they perceived and what they felt. And so that was an eye-opener for this executive. And so it was the first step sort of to realization that, okay, I need to change certain things in order to not send the wrong message, you know. And so what's going on in my life, and what am I doing on a, you know, daily basis that's causing this? What are my thoughts that are causing this? And so we, over the course of 6 to 12 months, we there was basically a two-step engagement. In the first 6 months, we worked together, and then we added another 6 months. But yeah, the person became a much more open, more inclusive person. In meetings, in conversations, you know, people weren't afraid to approach him any longer. They were able to share things, and he wouldn't fly off the handle, so to speak, wouldn't lash out emotionally. And it made a big difference. And again, the higher up you go in an organization, the more influence you have, over the culture, over how people behave. And so it really is very important that people watch how they communicate, and in this case, of course, it was, you know, was other people that had a big stake in that person's success, and they said, "Look, we need to do something about this. You need to get some coaching here," you know. And so, fortunately, he was very open to it. He just wasn't aware of of that once he was made aware of it. He said, okay, yep, I agree, so let's do something. Yep.
Might even be life-saving. You never know if it's, you know, if it affects people's health too.
Absolutely, yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, it goes,
yeah.
All seems to be tied together. We're getting a question. I was going to ask you this also because I think it's so important, about nonverbal communication, actually, as well.
Yes.
So if you and I were sitting in a room and we were doing this interview in a room, what would you be looking for that I might do as a habit or a fumble or a stumble or something good or bad? You know, just all the things that you look for that people do when you're actually there in person.
Mm. You mean, so what would I look for to ensure that you're communicating effectively, or?
I think that's probably the best way to answer that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, body language, very important, obviously, you know, because our body language very often, it supports everything else we're talking about. You know, there supports our points, basically. But there are people that have said that it's more important how you say it than it is what you say. You know, people believe your body language more than they believe your words. And I think these are generalizations that are not necessarily true. However, just imagine, take that simple example of, again, this person I was just talking about, this client, you know. Or imagine you walking to the office and you say, good morning, everybody. What a great day. But your body language, your posture's, you know, slumped or slouched, and your facial expressions are clearly not supporting what you're saying. So you're inauthentic. There's a discrepancy, you know. So eye contact. It's one of those things where everybody tells you that in a meeting, of course, you have to make eye contact, you know. But it's also something that's very often just given lip service. You know, for instance, if I'm in a conversation with you, or if I am giving a presentation to 30 people, you know, this eye contact thing, we can make eye contact but still be completely somewhere else. You know, there's a slight glassy look on people's eyes, you know, when they're not, you know, people can fake it pretty well. However, the bad news is that people usually can tell when somebody is present or not. You know? And so that's a big one, that you're sitting across from someone and not making authentic eye contact, not being really in the moment. And again, a lot of those people think they can fake it. They can just look at you and look like they're present, but they're not. You know, so body language, again, and it depends on the situation, but leaning in, being present, you know, not fidgeting. There are lots of things that, I mean, if we were sitting across from one another, like, I could actually show you, you know. So, but it is, we do a lot of things with our hands and our feet and our face that sort of betrays our emotions. You know, we think we can hide things, nervousness, or say, you know, being deceptive or being interested. We can't, you know. It's a lot of times it's, they call it emotional leakage, you know, so it just kind of comes out what we're really feeling, what we're really showing. Or it's the other way around, you know, where somebody does not emote at all, and, mm-hmm. and someone just, you know, blandly gives information and expects people to, you know, that's not very effective in getting people to respond emotionally. So you need to be there. You need to be fully into your topic, into your subject, into the attitude you're trying to convey, the mood you're trying to establish. And that's all part of the preparation. Thinking about that beforehand will help you just be more present when it actually happens.
Yeah. Yeah, I was saying I'm the worst at that because I have a complete and total inability to lie whatsoever. Like, I just, I'm really serious. Like, my face and my expressions and my body language and everything, I'm like an open book. You can tell exactly mm-hmm. what I'm thinking and feeling and going to say and do based on the way I look. It's very, I think that's pretty true to everyone unless you are an actor and do mm-hmm. and have the ability to know above and beyond, you know, your raw self or your authentic self, how to,
sure.
to change that. To fake it or whatever, but I currently do not possess that ability whatsoever. I'm just me. And I kind of like it like that. Do you have to command a presence and be an executive presence and all that stuff? Is there a certain element of having to fake it and be all uppity and be an ego and so forth? You can't
I don't know if I'm a huge fan, because I just use that term myself, the faking it. But imagine imagine you're an executive and you're in a negotiation, or really anyone. I mean, just think about, think about a couple going to buy a car, right? And let's say the salesperson is giving you a price, and you think, the price is still too high, but, they're throwing in all kinds of things that you're actually very happy about, so you don't necessarily want to, show this incredible happiness or just emotional outbursts of joy, because, now you're locked in perhaps to that. It's going to be harder for you to negotiate that price down lower, let's say. But, there are lots of situations where we need to be in control of our emotions, and we can't necessarily immediately show or likely show how we feel about something. So I think that your inability to fake it, or your inability, people around you obviously know that you're honest, you're an open book, and that they can trust you, and that you're a very straightforward communicator. But you are also a professional, so you know that in certain situations, you can't, if you get angry, if you get frustrated,
you gotta cap it.
You need to be able to control those. So it's a mixed bag. But in general, the higher up you go, again, think about the president of the United States or any other very high-ranking official, just making an offhanded joke like we all do, making an innocent comment that could be construed a million different ways. And so really, when you're in a high-stakes situation, you have to be very careful about what you say, how you react, your facial expressions. Do you remember the debates with Al Gore and George Bush in 2000?
Yeah.
How Al Gore's sighing became a topic of national debate. He was sort of rolling his eyes and looking away and sort of
Saturday Night Live too. You mean? Yes.
Sure. Everywhere, right? And so talk about the very quick, just basically facial expressions that were huge. Made him. People were talking about him being arrogant and dismissive and rude. And you have to be very careful. If you're in a position of leadership and responsibility, people look to that and they try to figure you out. And then a lot of things take on a certain magnitude that just matters more in those cases.
I think that's tending to happen to almost to anyone, because anything can go viral. I mean, I am so thankful. Seriously, I'm hoping the tapes are buried from when I was a news reporter, because I've fallen in snowbanks. I've done some great stuff on camera, And, some of that stuff now would probably land virally. And
absolutely.
It isn't and hasn't. But, I think anybody probably needs to be cautious.
More important than ever. Nowadays, everybody's armed with a high-definition cell phone camera. And video is just everywhere. Nowadays you have to be even more careful. Whether you're in the workplace or in a private environment, you have to be very careful and protect your personal brand, because very easily a clip of your life, just a slice of a moment, can define you. And we see that all the time in the news and played out in the media. And but it can happen to us too, So just again, an innocent comment. I always say, when we hear about things like that, when they play out in the media, and then you have to ask yourself, if there were a microphone, in every room in America, it would just be, we'd all have to be, a lot more careful of what we say. Again, comments we make and jokes we make, and so people have to be very careful about how they, otherwise you do end up on YouTube, and that's not a good thing.
I kind of operate taking a lot of responsibility for the things I do, And that includes social media, it includes talking, writing, and so forth.
Sure.
And I'm curious, if you're highly opinionated on something, and not you specifically, I mean just in general, if there's a person out there and they're highly opinionated, how do you go about that as to not offend or alienate half of your audience or so and so forth? I'm always curious about that on TV. You know, you see people, they get like this panel, even on some of the trials recently or politics or whatever, you take whatever subject you want to, and you'll get a panel and one person will think this way, one person thinks this way, another thinks, is that taken all in good fun? And, or all in good seriousness, or all in good offensiveness, or do we all read that differently? Because I'm thinking half the time, wow, I can't believe they just expressed that opinion.
It's an excellent question, actually, Elizabeth. And what I would say is, look at your brand, right? Look at who you are, especially if you're in the public eye, as you are, for instance. You know, you have your give your program, a very popular program. And so when you say something and you all of a sudden start, adding to that brand, let's say, you know, to me, a personal brand is like a mosaic, you know, all these little pieces from your communication to the way you present yourself to the images online that are there of you, to your bio, your summary on LinkedIn. I mean, all these pieces give someone a glimpse when they try to figure out who is Elizabeth, then they can put the pieces together and come up with a certain image, a certain picture. Now, let's say you start ranting about, there's a topic that has really nothing to do with your personal brand, but you just feel the need to voice your opinion on it. And, whether it's a media topic in the media or just any controversial topic, well, all of a sudden you're adding that to your brand. Now, yes, absolutely. You'll offend certain people and you may, you know, gain new fans on the other end. But I would say it's very careful. You need to be aware of it. You know, so it's not like can you do it or can you not. You just have to be aware of how that affects your brand and how people will perceive you. You know. The people that you see on TV, of course, they're pundits, right? So they are people that they're paid for their opinions. They are, and whether it's an Ann Coulter, whether it is a Chris Matthews, whether it is, you name it. I mean, whether it's, you know, people that you see on a regular basis on CNN. I mean, these people, whether legal analysts or you name it. These people that's their brand. They're sort of a fire brand, right? So they're very passionate. They're very opinionated about something. And everything they say kind of falls in line with that brand. But if you go off on something that, perhaps you can't stand all the tourists in, let's say you live in New York and you say, I cannot stand all these tourists in New York, you know? Well,
That adds to your brand, didn't it?
All of a sudden, yeah, and then you'll have people that say, "Well, great, that these tourists contribute a lot to the income, to the revenues in New York." And so, but bottom line is, whatever you say, you just have to be aware of it, you know, and how it affects, and not be surprised when you get some flack then from people that have a different opinion than you, you know, and see it differently. So it's all about anticipating, being prepared, and knowing what you're getting into.
Yeah, you know, one of the people who I most love in this world is Betty White. I just absolutely love her, and I've got, you know, books on her and so forth. And she's always been very careful intentionally to never, until maybe a little bit recently, express any politics into her brand.
Sure. Absolutely. I mean, and a lot of people, especially in the public eye, you know, they're very carefully managed public images and so it's all to protect that brand and to meet expectations people have of that brand. You know, remember Tom Cruise when he was, he was at the height of his fame, and then, Scientology keeps getting into the public conversation. Remember his couch jumping, and all of a sudden people thought he was crazy, and all those things. Now all of a sudden that was a little bit outside of the line of what people knew and expected from Tom Cruise, right? And so there was a lot of controversy around that. It's when you display and certain behaviors or you say things that people didn't expect from you, then, again, it just opens the door to people that are for you, people that are against you. And I always say it's just a matter of being aware of it's just you can never be aware enough of what you're sending out there, you know, the kind of messages you send.
And I really think that advice goes to whomever you are listening.
Yep.
I mean, really and truly, no matter what you're doing, I think that's just brilliant advice. Because we're all communicating with each other on a daily basis.
Absolutely.
In whatever we're doing. And, you know, have you ever been stuck at somebody with work and they're cranky and just yapping about politics the whole day or whatever? Or, you know, you're just sitting there going, oh, you know.
Sure.
Do you know what I mean? You're just like, I don't want to talk about that topic. And then you kind of avoid. Have you ever been in that situation where you're just like, okay, I don't want to talk about politics with you and that's all you ever do? Or whatever. It could be shoes or what's the sales or, you know, there's just all sorts of things we all talk about. And depending on whether you're negative, positive, it portrays a picture of you.
Absolutely. And you need to be aware of, I mean, if you have social intelligence and awareness of your surroundings, then you can tell whether people become uncomfortable, you know, whether they want to get into that conversation or whether they, you know, whether it becomes a spirited debate, then great, you know, and everybody keeps it civil. But there are people that we all know, I think, that just want to, are dying to shove their, you know, their beliefs and their opinions down other people's throats. And if you can't get away fast enough, then you're going to hear an earful. You're going to get an earful.
Yeah, essentially, I was trying to think of this. I was in the nail salon the other day sitting next to somebody, and they had the TV on, you know, trial, and this person was sitting next to me going, what do you think? I'm like, I'm getting my nails done. I think I want to pink. You know, kind of thing. I'm like, and, you know, I said, you know, I'm just sitting here relaxing with my, you know, my mommy time away from kids, you know, kind of thing. And I had not, you know, I made up something. I'm like, I have not been following that carefully. And, you know, I kind of shut the TV off a little bit. And so what are you doing this summer? I just completely shifted the conversation to a different topic altogether.
And that's a good strategy. I would say that's an excellent strategy is to, you know, when you're in a situation like that and you don't want to discuss something, then shifting the conversation and, again, asking some open-ended questions that can't just be answered with yes or no is a great way to move away from a topic you just don't want to discuss.
Yeah. Now, if you saw me right now, I'm not all decked out in my suit and heels with my hair done, right? Not there right now. But how important is that presence? How important is it to dress for success? I know, you know, we're talking about executive presence. We're talking about speaking. We're talking about communicating. We're talking about all these things. If I show up in a really important business meeting with shorts, tennis shoes, my nails not done, and my hair on top of my head, how successful is that?
We don't even have to go that extreme, Elizabeth. Let me give you a more subtle example.
Okay.
One of my clients who works for Standard & Poor in a senior leadership position was promoted to that senior leadership position, and dresses absolutely, you know, appropriately. Good, not just appropriately, but good quality clothing, good quality shirts, good quality, you know, pants and shoes, and has just an overall executive look. But that person used to, because he commuted into New York, used to carry a backpack. And that backpack, the senior leaders around him, you know, it became sort of an informal, is part of the informal narrative that existed there. And people were thinking, man, it just doesn't seem to take it very seriously. And he's not very, you know, he really needs to put on a more executive image and show an example of the of the culture here, of the leadership culture and of the corporate culture here. It's just very unprofessional. You know, you shouldn't be walking. And again, these are all unofficial things that I heard then. You know, you shouldn't be walking around like with a knapsack and you know, just something like that. And so we had that conversation. We sat down and as part of our coaching, I said, these are some of the, are you surprised by some of these comments, just about a backpack versus a nice attaché versus a nice a briefcase, or, you know, I mean, they're bags that, you know, multi-use bags that, you know, for laptops and so on. And he was surprised by it. And he said, wow, that's, you know, but he was also very open, but he understood that, again, impressions and perception is reality for a lot of people. And if people, and if, at first he rebelled a little bit against it, he said, wow, that shouldn't matter. I mean, I have a commute. I have a lot of things that I need to carry with me. I said, so great. So you have a choice. And you can either ignore them or you can say, it's definitely making a statement. Do I want to make that statement? Do I want to ignore the voices that say, it's not that professional, you know? And so very quickly he made the decision. I mean, I left it up to him, but I knew what he was going to do then. And he made the decision to get a new briefcase, to get an appropriate leadership briefcase. I also told him, I said, look, casual Fridays are over for you. You know, he would wear jeans to the office, but when he's promoted to that level, he, and I said, casual for you at this point is an open-collared shirt, but nice slacks, nice shoes, because you always want to, you know, you don't want to look like one of the troops, because you want them to look up to you. You want them to see you as their leader, and you want them to, you know, so it's a fine balance that you have to, you always have to be aware. So, yeah, forget about wearing curlers to a corporate meeting, Elizabeth. It's as subtle as the stiffness of your shirt collar and the bag you're carrying, so.
Yeah, I had that kind of experience in the corporate, you know, I was in the corporate culture for a really long time at a company in Minneapolis, and I had that experience with my nails. I played piano my whole life and never had fake nails ever because they get in the way. And so I never even thought in a board meeting to have my nails done. It didn't even cross my mind. And then I was sitting next to another female executive, and she could just, after the meeting, she kind of took care of me. She's like, I need to make an appointment for you if you're going to be in here to get your nails done. I'm like, seriously, that matters? She's like, oh, yeah. And so I'm like, do you see me without my nails on? With, you know, they're clear, they're not hot red, you know, unless it's Christmas, and then I've got maybe a Christmas tree painted on, but I'm not in a board meeting. But, you know, that type of stuff matters. Even your nails, even if you have them done, I know this is very girl for a moment here, but, you know, even if you have your nails done, if you're in a board meeting and you have glitter on your nails or, you know, painted flowers, you know, that stuff matters.
Yeah, it really does. It really does. And it matters for, you have to think about the culture that you're in, right? So if you are working for, you know, for a Standard & Poor, clearly a different corporate culture than if you worked for a Google, you know, where an executive might, you know,
yeah,
you know, fly by you on a skateboard, you know, in jeans and a t-shirt, you know. So you have to understand the culture you're operating in, and really look around and get a good idea of what's appropriate, what's inappropriate in this scenario, and then take a cue from your environment.
So let's go back to your books for a moment, and.
Mm-hmm.
Can you pick one, like pick the latest one, and just tell us a little bit more about it and what it's about and what you're going to do with it? Because I'm curious what kind of coaching and speaking and things like that you're going to do with your book.
Sure. The latest one, the 360 Degrees of Influence, is that the one you're talking about?
Yeah.
Yeah. That one is, let me tell you what I'm doing here is the a business school in Colombia, for instance, has invited me to come to Colombia in August for 2 days, and then in September for a week. I'm speaking at 8 universities, and bringing that concept of 360 degrees of influence there to Latin America, and starting in Colombia, because they understand, the publisher, my Latin American publisher for the book, they really want to promote this concept, this idea that influence is just not something that you only have in the top leadership positions, because we all need it. Because if you imagine for a moment having no influence in the world, or having no real influence, that means you wouldn't be able to get a colleague to make time for you to share a concern that you have. It means you wouldn't be able to persuade your boss to let you test an idea that you have on company time, let's say. It means not being able to recruit people to work with you on a team project, or not being able to convince your clients that your solution is better than a competitor's solution. So, down to the simple, not being able to convince your friends to try a new restaurant that you found versus the places you always go to. So influence is just such an important tool in anyone's arsenal, that it's just something worth learning and something worth promoting. And so this business school wrote a case, business professors at the University of Bogota wrote a business case involving a local CEO, and they are basically using principles from my book, from 360 Degrees of Influence. And so students from all over Colombia answer the questions and submit their answers, having read my book, and there'll be a winner of that contest. There'll be three winners, I believe, first, second, and third prize. And so, yeah, I'm going around Colombia to promote that. But I've always been fascinated by that idea of influence and what we do with it. So it's something everybody needs, I think.
Oh, I think that's brilliant. Yeah, and speaking with you, you just get more and more brilliant every minute. It's really a fun conversation. I could go on and on and on. And I'm just looking at the time, actually, and it's like we have 5 minutes left. But my goodness, I'm going to spend these 5 minutes talking about how brilliant you are. So just cover your ears and deal with it for a minute, because I'm going to ask you some questions too. Have you always, when you were a little kid, did you just know you were really smart? Because you're really smart. I can just tell listening to how smart you are.
Oh, you're so sweet. But I've always been very curious. I wouldn't say I've always been very smart. I don't know. But I've always been very curious. You know, I taught myself English. I mean, English is not my native tongue. So my native tongue is German.
German.
Yeah, I'm from the Munich area in Germany. And so, I taught myself English as a little kid, where I thought it was just the most beautiful language I've ever heard. And so we had American radio stations and British radio stations in Germany for the military. And so I would listen to the news and look up every word I didn't understand. And so which is just part of that interest I've always had in communication, communicating more effectively, communicating better with people, connecting with people. And it obviously, I never knew I was going to come to the U.S., but here I came in 1995. I came over here and loved it ever since. Love
really?
The country, love the people.
Oh, how neat is that? That's a whole other. We're going to have you back and learn about that, because I am so fascinated. Oh, my gosh. I am so fascinated by people who move here from other countries and speak different languages and do all the. I just speak French, and it's kind of boring.
Well,
it was
quite a culture shock. So, but I tell you, even though I was ready for it, but certain things you're not ready for. Lots of funny things happening, too. So we'll talk some other time about that, I'm sure.
Yeah. Oh, that's brilliant. Well, best of luck with your new. You have a new. When does that come out? What did you say? Is it
December? Yep.
December.
It'll come
okay.
In December.
And then you're this August, like next month, Colombia, or a year from now, Colombia.
Yeah, Colombia. And in fact, I'm going to Singapore and Australia the week of the 12th, and then I will be the following week in Colombia, and then. But first, I'm going on a few days on vacation to Turks and Caicos. So I'm looking forward to that.
Tough. A state to someone who's never been out of the United States, so it's very cool.
I'll send you pictures. How about that?
Yeah, oh my gosh, I would love pictures. So, all right, well, thank you very, very much for joining us, and I will follow up, everybody, on besteveryou.com and in social media with more links and more information about Harrison Monarth and all of his books and this conversation. So thank you so much for being with us. Thank you, Harrison. Yeah.
And my pleasure. It was a lot of fun speaking with you. Thank you so much, and thanks to the people listening.
Yeah, thank you, everyone. And then on Thursday, I hope you will all join us, because we have Maine's own astronaut, Jessica Muir, on the show. She's going to be joining us for the hour, And she is being trained to be an astronaut at NASA. So we are all very proud of her. And there's a big write-up in the Press Herald about her. And I contacted the newspaper, and they contacted her. And so here we are with her on the show on Thursday. So very excited and proud of that. And thank you, Harrison, again for joining us. And thank you all for listening. And thank you, Denise. Hello, Denise, in the chat room. I thank you very much for your support today. And take care, everyone. Have a beautiful, beautiful day. Thank you again, Harrison.
Bye-bye. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Best Ever You Show. Want more? Visit us at besteveryou.com. Be your best and keep it real. Confident, successful, caring, and beautiful every day with Best Ever You.